This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. Last month, the Australian Bureau of Statistics released data on all the deaths from COVID-19 since the beginning of the pandemic. For many, this data highlighted the unequal way that this pandemic has affected some communities, such as migrants and people from low socioeconomic areas. But for some radio hosts and columnists, these figures represented something different. Proof that lockdowns and other interventions were an overreaction or were the result of a scare campaign. So, what does this data show? And how did sections of Australian media get some of this wrong? Today, how data on COVID deaths was misinterpreted by right-wing media. It's Thursday, the 3rd of March. Hello, Lolo.
Oh, hi.
Nick Evershed is Guardian Australia's data and interactives editor. So, Nick, recently the Australian Bureau of Statistics, or ABS, released some interesting data on the demographics and fatality rates of COVID patients. Can you take me through some of the big things that we found in that data?
Yeah, so the ABS released this in mid-Feb, and it's all about the demographics of all the people who have died from the virus in Australia. So that data accounted for all deaths in Australia up until the end of January, and it covers about 2,639 people who've died in that time period. And actually, since then, there's been a lot more deaths from Omicron. So we're currently at around 5,100, and that will go up day by day.
Right. So let's break down the data that we did have up until the end of January, that high 2000s figure. What sort of trends did we see in that data?
It confirmed a few things that we already knew, either from numbers in Australia or from overseas. So certainly people who were, you know, age 60 and over, 70 and over, 80 and over were much more likely to die. And a lot of the deaths were in these age groups. The highest number of deaths were for people in their 80s. The median age, and median is similar to an average, the median age was about 83 years old. And the numbers also tell us some interesting trends around migrants and people with pre-existing chronic health conditions.
Right. Let's start with migrants. What did we learn about fatality rates and migrants from this data?
So this was actually one of the more shocking things in the report, and it wasn't something that we really knew a lot about before this report. Basically, people born overseas were disproportionately represented in death numbers. So people born overseas were 64% of COVID deaths.
Wow.
Even though they're only about 30% of the population.
Do we know why that is?
Yeah, so my colleagues, Melissa Davey, our health editor, and Josh Nicholas, one of our data journalists, looked into this, and experts say it's essentially because migrants often undertake essential, insecure work, so they're more exposed. So this might be things like carers, cleaners, nursing, aged care homes, and then things like working in factories and all that sort of thing. These aren't jobs that you can do from home, and that means they're much more likely to come into contact with other people. And there's other aspects as well. So government, both state and federal, were quite slow in kind of tailoring health information towards non-English speaking people, and looking at specifically some of the health programs that came out. We didn't see those come out until a bit later in the pandemic here. And experts say that this probably contributes as well, including to things like vaccine hesitancy, because they just weren't getting the same sort of information that other people might have been getting.
Right. So poor working conditions and a lack of culturally appropriate COVID information. These are some pretty broad systemic issues. Is that a common theme in this data?
Yeah, definitely. So the death numbers like with cases, as we've already seen in other reports, the death numbers were much higher in people who live in areas with higher disadvantage.
Mm.
And so that's measured by the ABS in terms of income, educational attainment, and a few other things, including the type of work that people do in those areas. And we saw that almost 40% of all COVID deaths were in the more disadvantaged areas. And then that went down as you kind of went up to the least disadvantaged areas. This actually isn't surprising either. You see this pattern with a lot of things. You see this pattern with other diseases, with other health issues.
Mm. Right. So what about that last group, Nick, the group with pre-existing conditions? What did we learn about them?
So in the ABS report, it was simply showing the number of deaths of people who had a chronic condition. It didn't tell us much about the risk or the rate, but we do know that from other research anyway. We know that people who have certain chronic conditions have a higher risk of death if they're infected with COVID. So the ABS data simply told us that about 70% of the deaths had a pre-existing condition, and that's about maybe 1,700 people in this data.
Right. And when you say pre-existing conditions, what conditions are we talking about here?
Things like chronic heart disease, cardiac conditions, diabetes, hypertension, so high blood pressure. Cardiac conditions were the most common, with about 36% of all the deaths there. And cancer was also quite common at about 14% of deaths.
Mm. So, Nick, I know the conversation around underlying conditions has been controversial. We've seen some claims that deaths from COVID-19 were being overreported because the cases of people with underlying conditions were people who may have died anyway because of this condition and not because of COVID. Is there truth to that claim, especially from what we see in this ABS data?
The ABS report is very clear on this. It says the majority of these deaths were due directly to COVID-19. Mm. So this is more than 96% of deaths related to COVID, leaving just 83 people who died with, but not due to COVID. So these people wouldn't have otherwise died.
So the vast majority of deaths where people had COVID, 96%, were due to COVID. That is pretty clear. How do we see the reporting of this data play out?
Yeah, so what we saw just after this report was released was some pretty straight coverage. And we also saw it got picked up by some broadcasters like Paul Murray on Sky News.
This is Paul Murray Live. We've got some facts today, not fear, not spin. It's straight out data. And data, it always ends up telling the truth.
And Ben Fordham on 2GB.
Don't worry, we're not going to be going on and on and on and on and on about coronavirus because we know that we have moved on. But I've got to say, with each passing day, we do feel somewhat vindicated on this program because we've done our best to call for calm during the pandemic. And we've also been warning about how this has been overhyped.
And what happened from there was a series of commentators on radio and opinion columnists really misinterpreting the actual numbers, getting some things wrong, but also sort of just misunderstanding what it means as well.
Mm.
And that went on for at least, I don't know, I think last count I had 5 or 6 different articles and segments in this basket. So it was surprisingly widespread using the same errors. All of these articles and segments sort of used this report to suggest that in some ways, our response to COVID has been a big overreaction.
Get rid of the codes, pull down the borders, take care of the people who are most at risk.
You know, they were very kind of nuanced about it in some ways, I guess. They were careful to emphasise that all deaths were tragedies and that sort of thing. But at the same time, they really tried to make the point that it was such a low number of deaths and quite possibly some of the government responses like lockdowns and mask mandates and all that sort of thing were an overreaction or a scare campaign or something like that.
Mm. So what did they get wrong?
So starting with Sky News, Paul Murray said that...
How many people have actually died, not with, but exclusively from COVID in Australia in the past couple of years? It is 83. Now, every one of those is absolutely a tragedy, as is the 2,000 before that. Not belittling any of that, but I'm putting it in perspective.
But as we saw earlier, that's actually just the number of people who died from something else who also tested positive to COVID at that time. The ABS included a figure for the deaths with COVID, which is died from something else but tested positive. And that number was the 83 one. And he's just misread that.
So, Nick, who else appears to have misinterpreted some of this data, and what did they say?
Yeah, so Ben Fordham on 2GB spoke about how these figures showed that most deaths had underlying conditions, and suggesting then that COVID was not solely responsible for the deaths.
Mm.
So Fordham and many others actually got the percentage of COVID deaths with underlying health conditions wrong. They said it was about 91 or 92%.
Of our 2,639 coronavirus deaths between March 2020 and last month, 92% had other underlying health issues. 92%.
When it actually should have been 69%. So they've used the number of cases where only COVID was reported on the death certificate, and that's about 220 deaths out of the total. But they actually missed a further 560 deaths, which should have been included. And he said that these figures mean the COVID response was a fear campaign.
And we've been giving you a regular dose of perspective. We know COVID-19 is serious, but it doesn't warrant the fear campaign that we've been seeing.
When saying this, he did do a bit of a disclaimer. So he insisted later in the same broadcast that they are not downplaying the risk of COVID.
We're not playing down the situation. We're not ignoring the grief of families. But these records expose the overblown scare campaign we have witnessed.
He also said that if people have other risk factors, such as they're overweight or smokers, they're putting themselves in danger. And he went on to say that he actually thought the best health advice that could have been given was for unhealthy people, as he called it, to get fit.
Why aren't we warning people that one of the biggest risk factors is carrying around too much weight? Because every day we were being told about the health advice, but the most important health advice should have been, the healthier you are, the greater your chance of surviving coronavirus.
You mentioned there was also some articles, not just broadcasts, that went into this. What kind of claims did we see there around this data?
Yeah, similarly, we saw Rita Panahi, who is a commentator in the Herald Sun, wrote a piece talking about these statistics with similar interpretations. She also got the number of deaths with pre-existing conditions incorrect. And she said that the ABS data should shame every alarmist bureaucrat, politician and media blowhard who championed lockdowns, school closures and mandates.
Next, how misinterpretations of this data ended up in anti-vax groups online. So all of these claims are a lot to unpack, but I'm wondering if we can just talk broadly about the types of claims that are made in this reporting. I mean, what is the most misleading claim to you?
Yeah, there's really two that I took issue with, which is kind of on the interpretation of this numbers. It's while having like a health condition or a chronic health condition does put you at increased risk of death from COVID, it's not a death sentence. And having these chronic conditions is not a death sentence. So, I mean, I've got one myself. I've had high blood pressure since I was like 18, but I'm not going to die from that, you know, tomorrow. And it's true that if I got COVID, I'd be at higher risk, but that doesn't mean that I'm guaranteed going to die if I got COVID. So the key thing is, again, these people wouldn't necessarily have died if it wasn't for COVID.
And, you know, it's not just you who has an underlying condition in Australia, right? These are more common than what people think.
Yeah, they're hugely, hugely common. So the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare estimates that about 47% of Australians over 18 have one or more chronic health condition. And this goes up as you get older. So it's 60% of the 45 to 64 age group. And then 80% for those over 65. And these numbers are actually slightly different to the ones in the ABS. They include things like mental and behavioural conditions and back problems and that sort of thing. But you can still look at ones that the ABS uses. So like high blood pressure, 1 in 3 Australians have high blood pressure. And then obesity is another risk factor for COVID on the ABS report. Similarly, 1 in 3 Australians is obese. So a huge proportion of the population are actually in this category of having a pre-existing health condition.
What are the risks of this narrative that COVID deaths of people with underlying conditions were inevitable in some way?
To me, it's not very helpful, and it's not a good interpretation of the numbers, because it sort of implies that, you know, they shouldn't be counted in some ways, that the only deaths that maybe we should count are those of completely healthy people. But this ignores like a huge amount of the Australian population. And there's just like a lot of issues with interpreting it that way, I think.
Right. So we've got some outright errors on the numbers, some misleading claims around the significance of underlying conditions. You said there was another big thing that you think they got wrong. What was that?
Yeah, they're using the low number of COVID deaths in Australia relative to deaths from other causes to argue that people overstated the seriousness of the disease and that things like strict lockdowns and mask mandates were not necessary.
I have heard this idea repeated that only 1% of Australians died with COVID-19.
Yes, 1%. If you need any further evidence that it's time to get on with our lives, you just heard it.
I'm not quite sure where that 1% figure comes from, but what is wrong with the overarching idea that our low COVID-19 deaths means lockdowns weren't worth it or weren't needed in some way?
I call this argument the Y2K fallacy, for lack of a better term. So for those not familiar with Y2K, around the turn of the century, everyone was worried that all of the computers everywhere were going to break because of a little bug in the times and dates for when it switched over from 1999 to 2000.
I was 10, but I do remember it well.
And there was quite rightly widespread sort of concern around this and what it would do, you know, like planes falling out of the sky, medical equipment failing, all this sort of thing people were worried about. And a lot of people apparently worked very hard to make sure that these bugs were fixed. And then when the calendar ticked over to 2000, nothing happened. So then you had these articles coming out later where people were like, well, Y2K, that was a big fizzer.
Why did we make such a big deal about this?
Exactly. It was actually fine. And so this is sort of what you're seeing happening here. In Australia, we've actually been quite either lucky or quite good, probably a bit of both, with our public health responses, and we haven't seen the same amount of deaths that we've seen overseas. And so I guess because of this, these columnists and opinion writers are arguing that people have overstated COVID and all these measures and lockdowns and all these things weren't actually necessary. But the issue with this is it ignores the fact that we have this low number of deaths because of those things like lockdowns and border controls and vaccinations and all that sort of stuff. So it's not the right way to go about it, I don't think.
I've seen some people, Nick, compare it to someone surviving a car crash because they were wearing a seatbelt and then turning around and advocating to banish seatbelts because, look, they survived. Is that kind of fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's on the money there. And I should emphasize as well that it's not that I'm saying that all of these interventions worked. There were some that we saw that maybe there's not as good evidence for, like COVID fines and all that sort of thing. And there's also not to say that there's not a cost to these as well. There's absolutely a cost to harsh lockdowns and curfews and that sort of thing. But in terms of the actual measuring the health impact of it, a few people have kind of tried to estimate how many deaths we might have had if we hadn't taken all these measures. And the Prime Minister had one estimate of this, and he said we'd avoided, you know, the loss of about 30,000 lives, which is a pretty huge, huge difference.
Right. So how did these messages and this interpretation of the data spread?
We're actually able to look at how much these articles are being shared on Facebook particularly, using some social media tools that we've got. And it was actually a bit unfortunate, but a lot of these articles were being shared by accounts known for their anti-vax and anti-lockdown views, so to speak. You know, accounts that share conspiracy theories, accounts involved with some of the anti-vax and anti-mask protests that we've seen in Australia. And these people were very enthusiastic that the mainstream media was sort of getting into this idea now. And it's because there's been this kind of long-running conspiracy theory trope that COVID deaths aren't actually real for various reasons. These kind of groups make claims saying that, you know, all the death numbers are faked, or the people all died with COVID but not from COVID, and various other things which generally aren't true. But they do similarly misuse data, and they misuse reporting like this to help them make these points.
Right. You can see how a official media site stating that only 83 people had died from just COVID in Australia could be used and misused by anti-vax groups.
Yeah, that's right. And particularly with the Sky News broadcast, AAP ended up doing a fact check of the 83 number, that claim. And as part of that fact check, they actually showed a screenshot with those numbers, with like the little Sky News logo on it and all that sort of stuff, had been circulated around various anti-vax and anti-lockdown type accounts, and people were kind of responding to it quite favourably.
So, Nick, you've spent over the past 2 years deep in COVID data, breaking it down, trying to explain it to people most days. I mean, what's your concern about misinformation like this going unchecked? What are the broadest repercussions of something like this?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously really frustrating. It's something that can really undermine the seriousness of the COVID-19 situation. Obviously, if people think that the risk of death is far, far lower than it actually is, they might think COVID isn't that bad. So that, you know, potentially will have flow-on effects with people's behaviour and how likely they are to take public health officials seriously and the advice they give.
Right. We are going to have public health restrictions of some sort or another in place for still some time, it looks like, especially if new variants come along. So undermining the reasons for those public health restrictions is worrying. And it also can create unrest. We've seen protests continue. It's a convoy to Canberra. We've seen protests in Canada. They're also not going away. And this information can feed into the anger behind those groups.
I mean, that was one of my particular concerns with these articles and segments, is how well received it was by some of these groups. You know, we had people saying, we've been saying this sort of thing for 2 years, and, you know, now the mainstream media's coming along finally, and people kind of sharing it approvingly and saying, wow, you know, look, they're finally getting it. And it really made it clear that they felt vindicated in a way. They felt like it sort of supported a lot of the things that they'd been sharing and saying previously.
That was Nick Evershed, the data and interactives editor at Guardian Australia. Just a note on this story, Full Story approached all the commentators mentioned in this episode for comment. Only Ben Fordham replied, saying that he stood by his comments and that his intention was to highlight some of the unnecessary fear around coronavirus. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, Alison Chan and Carla Arnold. Camilla Hannan did the sound design and mixing. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay, that's it for today. Catch you tomorrow.